coming at you from the boys' room. We are recording podcast number 4 with Dr. Jim. Today we're going to be covering a variety of topics, from, of course, wine to a new product that was kindly sent in to us from Arvana, watches, pipes, scotch. So it's pipes in a podcast today from the boys' room with Dr. Jim. And what is new and exciting in your life, Dr. Jim?
It's just a good evening. Fall has started, and it's time for renewal.
Now, we had a really good dinner. We had leg of lamb roast, and the wine that we had with that was...
Tonight we went with Castilla Banfi's Bel Nero Toscana, which we did a review on quite a while back, and sent to us by Banfi to try out quite a few months ago, and we've now been able to get it locally because of connections here, and it's a very good Toscana. It's Bel Nero, of course, means dark beauty. It's fermented in wood and steel barraques and hybrid tanks. It's aged for about 12 months, at least in the barraques. It's a dark ruby color, almost black. It's got a floral nose with violets and blackberry and cedar, and tastes of cherry, anise, and candied fruit. And it has a long, dry finish. So in our reviews, we gave it 94 points.
And it went very well with the lamb.
Yes, went very well with the lamb.
I think if anyone's interested in whipping up a dinner for some friends and family and wanted to do a wine pairing, something a little different, leg of lamb roast with that wine was fantastic. I thought it was a fantastic wine. It was a little bit dry.
It is a dry wine.
Dry. I found the things that stuck out in my head were that it was dry, not in a bad way, tart. It was dark in color, and it had good flavor.
Very good. Very good flavor and aroma. And just very smooth, nothing harsh to it, nothing that would sort of be harsh tints or anything like that would sort of turn you off it.
And Banfi has been very good to Dr. Jim's wine reviews, have they not?
Yes, they have.
Yeah. They've been really good to us.
They've been a good supporter both in our tweets and in supplying of several wines to taste for them.
And I think overall, they make some really good wines, good value. And I think you really, if for those who aren't very familiar with Banfi wines, I think, let me know what you think, Dr. Jim. I think I would say that, you know, you should definitely check out Banfi wines.
They run the whole gamut, all the way from very high end to more wines that are a lot more affordable and easy drinking, to very high-end wines that we've enjoyed for a long time.
And unique flavors.
Very unique flavors, depending on where they're produced, which grape varietal they're from.
Yeah. Now, we're... tonight is pipes in a podcast.
Pipes in a podcast.
Usually we're smoking cigars. Tonight we have pipes, and we have three different pipes going here. Dr. Jim, what do you have today?
Well, I have an Irish Bent with a sterling silver handle and an older pipe that was from a collection from a friend of mine.
Okay, and what kind of pipe tobacco are you smoking today?
Tonight it's Regimental Blend.
Okay.
A darker, more traditional English blend.
And I'm not sure who the maker is, but I've had this pipe for quite a while, probably since the early 2000s. The only thing I know about it is that it's a bent pipe made in England, and I'm smoking a Virginia blend. And then our sound man, he's got a corncob pipe, and he's also smoking a Virginia blend. And I think it's a good change from the cigars that we're used to smoking. And it's a completely different mood, a completely different atmosphere, and a completely different aroma in the room. And I think we're probably going to be smoking pipes a lot more, too.
Yes, definitely. As winter comes along, it's a very good thing to do in wintertime because the pipe is and the bowl is nice and warm. Pipe smoke is smooth. Cigars are good for the outside and golf and that. Pipes do not do as well with golf because you have to have your hands free.
And they go out quick.
And they go out quickly, yes. They have to be relit.
So what wine are we drinking now?
Right now, we're just drinking a Stellen Bosch wine from Niederberg, which is one of their Cabernet Sauvignons.
And I'm drinking whiskey at the moment. How is the wine?
It's a nice cab. It's an easy cab. It's not expensive. It doesn't have as much flavor as some of the cabs, but it's an easy drinking, inexpensive cab, but running around about $14 a bottle.
Decent bottle of wine. Timepieces. What are you wearing today, Jim?
Oh, today we've gone old style.
We're going old school?
We're going really old school.
How old are we going?
This is a 1905 sterling silver Wilsdorf and Davis watch that Wilsdorf, Hans Wilsdorf, of course, is the founder of Rolex. Wilsdorf and Davis were... Davis was Hans Wilsdorf's uncle who basically funded the company. In 1905, they started a company that was basically importing Swiss movements into England. Because of duties in that, they had to bring movements in separate from cases. Some cases were bought from Switzerland. Those then had to be hallmarked. A lot of eboshes or movements were brought in and put in English cases, and they sold them in various stores in England. This is a 15-jewel movement, Aigler Reberg movement. Still runs very well.
Manual wine?
It's a manual wine. In 1908, they became Rolex. But a lot of the early watches are named after whoever sold them. So they'd be, if Selfridges sold it, they'd have their name on it. It was Harrods. They'd have Harrods' name off. It was a separate jeweler. They'd have their name on it. The case would be marked inside, and so would the movement as Wilsdorf and Davis. Aigler then became the main maker for Rolex, and they basically joined forces and became Rolex.
So Hans Wilsdorf, the founder of Rolex, if he drank wine, I don't know if he did or not, but let's just say if he did, what kind of wine do you think he would drink?
If you're in England at that time, it would probably be a lot of sherry.
Oh.
Sherry was very popular in the early periods in England, and even in the early, around the turn of the century and up, sherry was one of the more popular wines in England.
Interesting. And so I'm not drinking wine at the moment. I'm drinking some whiskey and just browsing through in the boys' room here, something else that we have in addition to wine, pipes, cigars, and all this is a lot of magazines, Cigar Aficionado, Wine Spectator, and Whiskey Advocate. And I'm just reading an article back from spring of 2016 about Japanese whiskey and... the interesting phenomenon that happened where when Japanese whiskeys started to gain a lot of popularity, which they didn't foresee, they're starting to run into a problem now where they can't keep up with the demand for their aged whiskeys. So now they're coming out with something called the NAS, which stands for No Age Statement. What they're trying to do with this is trying to find a way to keep up with demand by saying that each whiskey has its own character and maturation peak. So in some cases, what they're saying is that an older whiskey or an older scotch doesn't necessarily translate to a better product, and that the key is to determine at what stage it's at its peak. Which doesn't necessarily mean 15, 20, 30 years. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Jim?
I don't like that. I would actually rather they left the dates on them. Whether it's young or old, yes, it can be good, or it can be some vintages will be better than other vintages. But with just as Macallan is doing, it's also gone this way because they can't keep up demand with their scotches. And some of the Scotch whiskey makers are also doing this same thing as Macallan's doing as the Japanese. I would rather know what year it came from. And I can say, well, I like that year. I'm going to buy just that year because that's the one I like to collect. It could be an old one. It could be a young one. But you know what you're getting. With this, you don't know what year you're getting.
So if their rationale is then it doesn't matter what year you're getting, it's just
more based on sales.
You're getting a product that's at its peak, and that's I think what they're trying to market as the important thing.
But it gives you no choice then.
Mm-hmm.
You basically buy the whiskey at whatever they're telling you it is. You don't know what year it is. You can't make that choice yourself.
And you don't like the fact that Macallan seems to be doing that either.
Macallan was one of the first Scotch whiskey makers. I love Macallan. It's my favorite whiskey. I love the 18-year-old. Now that they're not telling you that, I'm not buying as much.
Okay. Now, we also have something that we mentioned in the last podcast, which was a product that was very kindly sent to us by a company called Airvana. We did an unboxing today. We're also going to follow it up with a, we were hoping to do the, podcast review today, but we're going to have to put that off to the next podcast, but we did do an unboxing and we're going to have some photos, and a small video of the unboxing. But from the unboxing, Dr. Jim, what are your thoughts so far on the Airvana, aerator?
It looks very interesting. The main thing about Airvana is one of the first electric based pumps. It's supposed to be an even pump, so that you get an even amount of pour out of the machine. The bottle stays upright so that sediment doesn't get mixed. So it's one of the first ones to prevent sediment from getting into the aerator, and we'll see how it works.
And it has batteries, right?
It's battery based. It uses two AA batteries, I believe.
Yeah,
that's about all we know about it so far.
Yeah, we're looking forward to actually giving it a good workout, as well as our livers, I guess.
Definitely.
Any interesting wines that you have on the horizon that you're looking at acquiring?
Recently, no. Just watching what's coming in, and there's been lots of sales recently, so we like trying out the sale wines. Testing one to see if it's very good, and then if it's good, we buy some to keep in the cellar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Question. If you could choose one place in the world as your first wine destination, where would that be and why?
Oh, that's a toughie. If I was going to a place for food and wine, I would go to Tuscany just to try the Italian wines and Italian food and bask in the scenery.
The wine and food combination would be absolutely fantastic. Second choice?
Second choice would probably be France.
And what the heck, why don't we go with third choice?
Third choice, of course, would be Napa. Napa to try all the cabs.
I'm thinking about the... what do you think the main differences are between the Italian wine market and the French wine market in terms of wine culture?
Both like to have wine en plein air and your food en plein air. So you're eating in the environment, and the wine and the food go with the environment you're in. So both are very similar that way as compared to North America, where most of the wine is drank indoors, and not as it's more of a different culture than it is in Europe. So I, in that sense, the wine is more part of one's life in France and Italy than it, say, is in North America and Canada, where it's people are into other things, like other spirits and other things with at separate times from their meals. In France and in Europe and Italy, it's with your meals.
And the wines in France, at least traditionally, seem to be a little bit more refined and balanced than perhaps the wines from Italy, which are a little bit more maybe in your face, maybe a little bit bolder.
Depends on the type, again. Certainly, the French wines are a little bit more lighter, a little bit more floral, but they can be strong also. Italian wines can be strong. Some are more for regular drinking, some are more for fine wine drinking and fine wine tasting. And every country has its own variances.
So favorite French wine and favorite Italian wine?
Oh. I do like a lot of the Burgundies wines, especially, and I also like a lot of Chateauneuf du Pape.
Mm-hmm.
In Italian wines, it's super Tuscans.
And what was one that we had? It was the Pogol.
Oh, Pogol Oro?
Yeah, Pogol Oro. That was a really thick, if I remember correctly, it was very full-bodied, very thick, a lot of flavor, very bold. That was quite a while we had that, I think.
Quite a while ago, and it can age for a long period of time.
Yeah, and that was, I'm trying to think, was that $80 plus? Maybe even, did it break even $100?
It runs $80 to $100 now. It probably runs $100 to $150 a bottle.
And
it's one of my favorite wines.
Yeah, I remember that being a really good wine.
Yep.
We're going to have to maybe see if we can get our hands on that again one of these days. I think that's maybe about it for today's podcast. We're going to be coming at you, as we said, with the Aravana review on our next podcast, so stay tuned for that. And we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pagogi, who, again, were kind enough to sponsor today's podcast. So if you're interested in Japanese food, you can check out their website at pagogi.com, P-O-G-O-G-I.com, pagogi.com. This is the second podcast that they've been sponsoring. And thanks to Banffy Wines, who, as we indicated, have been really good to us and producing some really nice, a really nice product. So we will see you on podcast number 5.
We'll see you on 5.